listening to Midday on WNYC. I'm Jonathan Capehart. In the fall of 1948, when Ernest Hemingway was just shy of his 50th birthday, he and his fourth wife, Mary Welsh Hemingway, traveled to Venice. It was there he fell in love with 18-year-old Adriana. Andrea, how do you pronounce her last name?
Ivancic.
Adriana Ivancic, a Venetian woman who inspired his writing and joined him in Cuba, where he wrote his last great novel, The Old Man and the Sea. In autumn in Venice, Ernest Hemingway and his last muse, Andrea de Robillon, tells the story of Hemingway's love affair with both the city of Venice and the muse he found there. It's published by Knopf. And as you heard, Andrea de Robillon is here. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you for having me here.
And thank you very much for that literal last minute, like, oh my God, I forgot to ask, how do you pronounce Ivancic? What's your personal connection to this story?
Well, the personal connection is rather tenuous in the sense that I had heard that this woman, Adriana Ivancic, whom I actually knew when I was a young boy, had some kind of a relationship with Hemingway, but it was all very vague to me. And it is only much later, when I was living in Venice, that her brother, who was then in his 90s, told me that they had sold the last packet of letters that Hemingway had exchanged with Adriana, and he had sold them to the JFK Library in Boston.
Now, but wasn't your great uncle Carlo, wasn't he a member of Hemingway's inner circle in the late 1940s?
Well, he was mostly a drinking companion. He was
that was a big part of his
yeah,
life.
Yeah, it was. And in that sense, he was very close to Hemingway. They used to go on these drinking binges in Venice at Harry's Bar, at the Gritti Hotel, and in Cortina as well. Hemingway thought of my great uncle Carlo as his best drinking buddy because he was a happy drinker, and so they got on very much together. And in fact, they even oddly wrote some fables together, and two of them were published and became quite famous.
And they were coherently written, given that they were drinking buddies. And
well, the stories were actually pretty strange. One was the story of a winged lion who flies to the savannah and meets with all the beasts in the savannah, and then flies back and goes back to Harry's bar and has his martini. So rather strange.
Rather strange, but it actually kind of makes sense given who we're talking about. So, Andrea, your book reads like a novel. How were you able to create such a detailed narrative with dialogue?
Well, I think largely because of the sources, the extraordinary sources. I had, as I said, the vast epistolary material, the letters between Hemingway and Adriana, the letters by Adriana to Hemingway. Also, there were a lot of famous people involved in this story, and many of them wrote memoirs, so it was also helpful to cross-reference and to sort of build an atmosphere around the letters. Also, things like Mary Hemingway used to keep a diary during her travels in Italy. So I think that was a very important source that allowed me to recreate that whole atmosphere, that whole period, with a great deal of details.
Do you feel that because you had access to Mary's journals, that you were actually able to have and recreate a three-dimensional view of the story that you were telling?
Yes, I think that is very much the case. And in fact, she is the third party in the story, the third protagonist, as it were, and a very important one at that, of course.
I'm speaking with Andrea de Robillon about his new book, Autumn in Venice, Ernest Hemingway and His Last Muse. So where was Hemingway's career when he and Mary, his fourth wife, arrived in Venice in 1948?
Well, it was very much at a low point. In 48, he hadn't published a novel in nearly 10 years. Mm. He was considered by the critics to be an author of the past, of another generation. They were all more interested in the up-and-coming novelists who had come out of the Second World War, the Norman Mailers, Gore Vidals, and James Jones. So Critics were not really interested in his work, and he himself was struggling to put together the next novel. So when he came to Italy, came to Venice and met Adriana, she really did have a crucial role in sort of restoring his creative powers and allowing him to start again, to write books.
I want to talk about Adriana in one second, but why did they decide to go to Venice? Had they been there before?
No, they'd never been there before, but that wasn't the reason they did go. They had actually planned in September of 48, Mary and Hemingway, to travel to Europe. They wanted to go in the south of France, visit Van Gogh country, Cezanne country, and then drive their car, this beautiful royal blue Buick that they had brought back from Cuba on the boat, tied like a mermaid at the top. The idea was to then travel up to Paris and go to the Ritz Hotel, which was Hemingway's favorite hotel in Paris, and where they had actually met and fallen in love. So that was the plan. And then because they were not able to dock in Cannes in the south of France, because there was a broken part of the ship. So they ended up going to Genoa. Mm-hmm. And the moment Hemingway set foot in Genoa, all his old memories from his youth came back to him. And he never did go back to France. And he just kept going in his blue Buick across the Italian landscape, in the Po Valley and up to Brescia and Bergamo and mm-hmm. into the Alps and then into the Dolomites and Cortina and from there on to Venice.
That's a beautiful part of Italy.
Yeah.
All of Italy is beautiful. But so they go through, they take that magical, beautiful drive, arrive in...
And he is reconnecting with his path, essentially, right? Mm-hmm. A past that he has removed. Don't forget that during fascism, Hemingway was not allowed in Italy, and his books were not published. So he had sort of put Italy aside. I mean, the important countries for him were Spain and Africa and Cuba, of course, and France. But Italy had been removed from his memory. And so now he was catching up fast.
So then he arrives in Venice. They arrive in Venice, he and his wife, Mary. How then do they meet? Does he meet Adriana Ivancic?
They meet at a duck shoot. One of the things that Hemingway wanted to do when he reached Veneto was to go duck shooting in the marshes north of Venice. And so some friends take him there. And again, he's always in his blue Buick. And then they pick up a girl, Adriana, who's only 18 years old, and she's a friend of the family where they're going for the shoot. And she's all wet because she's been waiting in the rain for hours, and he was late. And finally he arrives, and she steps into this very plush interior of this beautiful car, and she'd never seen anything like it. You have to remember, in 48, Italy was still struggling to come back after the war, so it was a poor country, this blue Buick was something from another world, really. So she enters the car. She has no idea who Hemingway is. She's only 18, has just come out of a nun school. So she's very innocent, very naive. And yet he is immediately struck by her beauty, by her silhouette, by everything that she had. So
I'm enraptured. I'm listening, but
because he said something. He later says, you know, when she stepped into the car, I was it was as if I was struck by lightning. Now, to use Hemingway would never use a hackneyed sentence like that, you know, to be struck by lightning, to describe falling in love. But I think he was using it in the sort of classical sense of the gods being capricious and. Hitting with a lightning. And I think he used that expression to say that he was really kind of hopeless, that there was nothing he could do about this, that this was something so powerful and strong that he was really in the hands of the gods. I mean, that's how I've interpreted that sentence.
And given that, so is that because, how long had he and Mary been married when this lightning hit?
About 3 years. Yeah, a little over 3 years.
And this, and Mary was his fourth wife.
Fourth wife.
And how long was his longest marriage?
His longest marriage was probably to Pauline Pfeiffer, if it was not to Hedley Richardson. I forget exactly. But anyway, he'd had longer relationships than Mary. But the marriage with Mary was not going anywhere. They didn't have any children together, for one, so that made it difficult. She had wanted a child very much, and she had a terrible abortion. So it was a union, a marriage that needed to be re-energized. And then this happens.
And so where does Mary fit in? Because they spend a lot of time together in Venice. Adriana, Ernest, Mary. The Hemingways leave. They go to Paris and New York and Cuba. Ernest and Adriana stay in touch. They go back to Venice. And he invites Adriana. Oh, not he. He has Mary invite Adriana and her mother to come to Cuba. What's going on here?
Well, that's very odd. That's very odd. It's a very strange situation. At first, Mary is not aware of what is going on between her husband and Adriana, and it takes her a long time to catch on.
Is anything sexual happening, or is it flirtation?
With Adriana?
Adriana and Ernest Hemingway.
Well, that's a complicated question to answer, because remember, she's only 18 years
right.
old.
That's why I asked the question.
Italy was then a very conservative country. There was no divorce, for one. And so I think if there was sex, it came later on. But there is no assurance of that. And she always claimed that the relationship was essentially platonic. The issue of the sex is there. It cannot be resolved entirely because only they knew whether they had sex or not. Mm-hmm. But certainly, it was a very erotically charged relationship, and very intense throughout.
So she does. Adriana does go to Cuba.
Yeah.
With the Hemingways.
Hemingway at a certain point decides, as you say, he makes Mary. Make the actual invitation, but it's his idea and it's a crazy idea. He says Adriana should come to back to Cuba with us, and eventually she does go with her mother, and Adriana and her mother live in the finca in Cuba with the Hemingways, and it's certainly a lot for Mary to bear, and there the situation turns into sort of Tennessee Williams tragedy in the tropics. I mean, there's a lot of violence going on and plates flying around and glasses of wine being thrown in each other's faces. The presence of Adriana in the house is, you can imagine, is wrecking
yes.
havoc, is wrecking
yeah.
havoc with the marriage. On the other hand, she is an extraordinary inspiration to Hemingway. And despite the chaos and despite the violence, despite the tension in the house, every morning at dawn, he is at his desk and he is writing as he has never written before. And so he writes a first novel under the influence of Adriana, which is,
across the river?
Across the river and into the trees. But right after that, he writes The Old Man and the Sea with Adriana practically sitting next to him at his desk, and he continues to write books that eventually will become Islands in the Stream and The Garden of Eden. And in all this period, all this, the sort of the later books of Hemingway, Adriana's imprint, Adriana's presence is very much felt.
As you said at the beginning of the interview, that there is a wealth of resource material, including writings from Adriana, right? What's the most stunning thing you learned from her letters or writings about that period and about him?
Well, what is interesting about the Adriana letters is the evolution of her sentiment for him. In other words, she starts out as being a kid. Her first postcard to Hemingway is like a very jokey, very flirtatious, but very naive little postcard. Then, as she grows older, but because let us not forget that the relationship lasted 8 years. So she goes from being a kid to being a woman. And it's fascinating to trace that evolution in her letters, in the way she speaks to him, and in the way she describes her love for him.
I've been speaking with Andrea de Robilant about his new book, Autumn in Venice, Ernest Hemingway and His Last Muse. On Wednesday, June 6th, Andrea de Robilant will be in conversation with writer Susan Minot at Rizzoli Bookstore. That's at 1133 Broadway at 26th Street. The event is co-sponsored by Rizzoli, the Italian Cultural Institute, and Knopf.